Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's better. Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, where we are also affectionately known as WUF. My name is Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my privilege and my delight to serve as your lay leader this morning, along with our guests, Paul Susi and Donna Darling. Whoever and wherever you are at this moment, whether you've been part of the fellowship for 50 years or 5 weeks, or this is your first time here, we want you to know that you are welcome, regardless of your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, regardless of whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do, or whatever your spiritual practices may be, or you have none. We are glad to have you with us this morning. I want to especially welcome newcomers and visitors, whether you're with us online or in person. Online, of course, is one of the ways that you can be with us and also join in conversation and fellowship following the service. Now, if you're physically here at WUF, there are 3 ways for us to be together. Here in the sanctuary, where we mask up, not because we're ordered to, but because we know that some of us are more susceptible to communicable disease than others, and we want everyone to feel safe when we're together. Downstairs in the coffee room, masking is optional. The service is on the screen, and there is plenty of space to move about if that's something that you feel you need. And for those that only feel safe practicing social distancing and totally masked companions, Forest Hall is 100% masked space. So if you fall into that category, we invite you to gather your friends and your family and watch the service there. So now, for those here in the building, let's take a minute to stand, look around, and greet your neighbors, especially if you see someone you don't. It's always hard to settle back down, isn't it? But that's what coffee hour's for. And so the good news is that after the service, everyone can get together downstairs and continue those conversations that you just started. So Paul is going to light our chalice this morning. And as he does that, join with me, please, in the responsive reading of John Daniel's beautiful poem, Prayer Among Friends. The words are on the screen and in your order of service, and your parts are underlined. Among other wonders of the world,
we walk here in the light of this unlikely world that isn't ours for long.
May we spend generously the time we are given. May we enact our responsibilities as thoroughly as we enjoy our pleasures.
May we see with clarity. May we seek a vision that serves all beings.
May we honor the mystery surpassing our sight, and may we hold in our hands the gift of good work.
And bear it forth whole, as we were born forth by a power we praise to this one earth,
this homeland of all we love. And speaking together our affirmation, let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. Our theme for February is love. A whole month of honoring and celebrating love in its many forms and its many disguises. Not just romantic love with all its complexities, but love of kids, nature, animals. Love that comes with deep friendship, love of community and country, and of course, love of family. Both the hallmark and the real versions. Traditional, intergenerational, blended, and chosen. In just a minute, we're going to take a look at what some of our WOOF families look like. And so I'm inviting the children to come up to the front row now so that they can be closer to the screen and get a better look. And get ready for our time for all ages. There's a poem by James Cruz that says it all. It's called Winter Morning. When I can no longer say thank you for the new day and the waking into it, for the cold scrape of the kitchen chair and the ticking of the space heater glowing orange as it warms the floor near my feet. I know it's because I've been fooled again by the selfish, unruly man who lives in me and believes that he deserves only safety and comfort. But if I pause, as I do now, and watch the streetlights outside flashing off one by one like old men blinking their cloudy eyes, if I listen to my tired neighbors slamming car doors hard against the morning and see the steaming coffee in their mugs kissing chapped lips as they sip and exhale each of their worries white into the icy air around their faces, then I can remember this one life is a gift each of us was handed and told to open. Untie the bow, tear off the paper, look inside and be grateful for whatever you find, even if it is only the scent of a tangerine that lingers on the fingers long after you've finished peeling it. Can we take a minute now to consider what it is that we're most grateful for on this winter morning? Speak it out if you'd like. And then let's take a moment to consider what it is that we have to give. Because gratitude and giving go hand in hand. We know this because we drink from wells we did not dig. We are shaded by trees we did not plant. And we are warmed by fires we did not build. As a fellowship, we are grateful for all the contributions that make WOOF happen. Not only financial stewardship, but all the gifts of love that come from us, from our volunteers, the gifts of time and talent that make things happen here, like coffee hour, like refinishing the floors in the sanctuary this week, like yesterday's celebration of life for Dave Hansen, and last night's first coffee house concert. And group soup next week. But we as a fellowship must practice what we preach. And so it is that each quarter, our social justice team designates an organization to receive our entire offering from one Sunday each month. And yes, today is the day. Today is the day that we will be donating the basket to Proud Ground. And here's what we want you to know about them. We're all familiar with the stability, the roots building, and potential for building wealth that home ownership can bring. But for so many, especially those who have been denied generational wealth and privilege due to systemic oppression, and especially in today's runaway housing market, the dream of home ownership can seem out of reach. Proud Ground works in the Portland metro area to help families afford their first home, and it works within a land trust model to ensure that families can continue to live in their communities and keep housing affordable for years to come. Donations, along with government funding, allow the organization to acquire homes at below market value, as well as provide the down payment for qualified families. In 2020, Proud Ground supported 56 new homeowners and has a goal of 200 over the next 5 years. You can look them up at proudground.org and learn even more about them. But for now, let's put everything that comes from our basket in their hands. Thank you, everyone, for your generous offerings this morning. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And now it is my joy and privilege to welcome and introduce to you my new friend, Donna Darling, a music ambassador from the Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church of Portland, where Donna is a member of the choir there. But it is we who are the beneficiaries of her very first solo performance of Stevie Wonder's Love's in Need of Love. Let's give Donna a warm welcome.
And I'd like to share one thing. I retired from MESD in June, so the union rep for asked me. Yeah.
What a small world.
What a small world. Okay. Good morning or evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster. Could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. Is that love's in need of love today? Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hate's going round, breaking many hearts. Stop it, please, before it's gone too far. Mm-hmm. the force of evil plans to make you its possession. And it will, if we let it, destroy everybody. We all must take precautionary measures. If love and peace you treasure, then you'll hear me when I say, is that love's in need of love today? Don't delay, send yours in right away. Hate's going round, breaking many hearts. Stop it, please, before it's gone too far. People, you know that love's in need of love today. Love's in need of love today. Let's give the world love. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
This morning's reading is titled Failing and Flying by Jack Gilbert. It is mistakenly titled in your order of service, Flailing. My apologies, I think. Everyone forgets that Icarus also flew. It's the same when love comes to an end, or the marriage fails, and people say they knew it was a mistake, that everybody said it would never work, that she was old enough to know better. But anything worth doing is worth doing badly. Like being there by that summer ocean on the other side of the island while love was fading out of her, the stars burning so extravagantly those nights that anyone could tell you they would never last. Every morning she was asleep in my bed like a visitation, the gentleness in her like antelope standing in the dawn mist. Each afternoon I watched her coming back through the hot, stony field after swimming, the sea light behind her and the huge sky on the other side of that. I listened to her while we ate lunch. How can they say the marriage failed? Like the people who came back from Provence and said it was pretty, but the food was greasy. I believe Icarus was not failing as he fell, but just coming to the end of his triumph. And so it is that love, like that ocean on the other side of the island, ebbs and flows, sometimes brings a lot of pain. But does it fail, or does it just flail a bit? Here on our chalice table, in the light from the flame of our shared faith in the spirit of love and life, sits a bowl of water. It symbolizes the depth of our community. And next to it, a basket of stones. If there's something on your heart, something that your heart is opening to, whether it be a joy or a sorrow or a question that you've been wrestling with, we invite you to come forward, place it in a stone, release it into the water. If you'd like to do that, we encourage you to come up this aisle, across, and back down. And when we're all reseated, we'll sing together. But come now, if you will. And join together in singing, "The River is Flowing." It is again my joy and my privilege to welcome another dear friend, Paul Soucy, who is actually not a stranger to this sanctuary. As a theater artist, community organizer, and activist who has worked diligently to bring theater to marginalized communities and those, especially those behind the walls in Oregon prisons, Paul has visited WOOF several times, performing originally with the Red Door Project's Hands Up, Don't Shoot. Then with cellist Anna Fritz, he shared their story of bringing an Iliad to Oregon prisons. Most recently, Paul donated to our annual auction his time and talent in the solo performance of The Fever by Wallace Shawn. Paul recently spent a month in the Philippines with his family, many of whom he had never met. And it is this that he shares with us this morning. Paul, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it. I think. I think I've reached the limit of it. Oh, I see. You gotta be intentional. Yeah, there it is. Thank you. I really appreciate the honor of sharing this space and time with you all in this way. I love this theme, this focus, and it has stirred up a lot of memory, a lot of feeling, a lot of wounds, and a lot of healing, of course, all of the things, as I consider what my recent trip to the Philippines has meant for me, and how I intersect with your community, and how I intersect in this world. So, yes, I'm the eldest of, I think, the latest headcount is that there are 88 direct lineal descendants of my grandparents, my father's parents. That's counting spouses, but still, it's a good number of folks. I was the first of my cousins born here in the United States. And so even though I'm not the eldest, I have an elder half-brother. My father's the eldest of the clan, and he's now the patriarch of the family, the Soucy family. I'm looked to often in my family as the next heir presumptive. It's like the royal family, but not nearly British enough. And I'm very conflicted about that. I'm very conflicted about being of this lineage. I don't speak the languages. My parents wanted me to not have an accent and to assimilate into the American dream. And so they didn't want me to be confused when I was little, when I was going to school. And so I did not learn Tagalog or Ilocano or Kapampangan or any of the hundreds of dialects in the Philippines. So every time I go over there, I'm like a giant toddler. I'm beloved. I'm seen as this symbol of American success. And at first glance, people look at me and assume that, oh, you belong here. You're a member of this family. Here, try this delightful, strange thing to eat. And here, let me feed you even more. And then I open my mouth and they realize, oh, you're American. Oh. And I see this shift of tactics, of relatings, of information that happens. And it is still affectionate. It is still loving. But it is also othering simultaneously. And that was a huge, and I'm 41 years old. This is the first time I realized that love can be alloyed with other things and still be love. Mm-hmm. And that can be painful. But that can also be a healing pain. I'm still navigating what that is. I don't belong here either, right? Like I've always been, for all kinds of reasons that we all know, right? Like I'm not who this country expects the ideal immigrant to be. I was a very angry student. I did not get along with my teachers. I never went to college. I'm still a very angry human. And I live with that anger every day. And I made terrible mistakes. And I stand here before you a wounded human who's ashamed of things that I've done and have not been my best self all the time, right? And so it's a strange thing to not belong here and to not belong there, to not belong in my family, to not have a family in the sense of the language that I keep hearing what family is meant to be. And I've struggled with that. I've struggled with the idea of that lineage. How am I supposed to be responsible for all of these hopes and dreams, these sacrifices, the incredible hours, the incredible days, the years, that the struggle that my mom gave up her dream of becoming a Catholic nun because her family duty was to become a nurse so that she could immigrate to America and save her family and have me here and I would have a better life. How am I supposed to earn that? How am I supposed to be worthy of that? What could I possibly do to be worthy of that? I will never, I've long since let go of wanting to please my late mom. She insisted that I would grow up to become a priest, and I I have not become a priest, I can tell you that. A few years ago, I saw the late, great Maya Angelou at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, and she said many, many things that I've forgotten so much already, but many things that changed my life and saved my life. And one of the things that she said was, always remember that you are paid for. She went on to explain that it's whenever you feel that you don't belong, that you're not good enough, that you're not worthy enough, that you don't belong here, that is when you think of all of those sacrifices. You think of the suffering that your lineage has gone through to lead to this moment where you are here now in those chairs here at West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. That those were done intentionally so that you could live the life you are living, so that we could vote, so that we could raise our own children, that we could live in community with one another in peace and love, right? And for a long time, that has carried me. That has been I don't need to understand the languages. I don't need to understand the sacrifices. We don't need to have spoken the same cultural languages or have had the same exact moral values, because it was an act of love that brought me here. And love is not necessarily fully understanding all the time, because love exists in time and space in a weird way where we're not always fully unanimous. Community is never unanimous, right? But I still keep coming up against that piece of that hurt of the fact that I don't speak the languages, the fact that I don't understand, that I disagree deeply with the choices that my parents made, that I don't buy into the American dream. I don't own a home. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a priest. I don't have children of my own. I'm terrified of this country and of this place that I didn't choose to be brought to. And that is where, in this trip in the Philippines, that is where I was in my heart, was who am I really supposed to be here? What is my obligation here? How can I build community and family for myself in this time and in this space? Now, I was meant to go with my father and with his fourth wife. Suffice to say that I don't get along with her that well. Typical, right, of all of these stories. There's a lot of conflict there. And I was under a lot of, I was feeling a lot of apprehension about the trip, but it was an act of love from my father. He wanted me to be present with him on what may be one of his final trips to the Philippines, and I wanted to do right by my father. And I had been 20 years ago. I had been instrumental in helping my grandfather, his father, have a good death. My grandfather died from stage 4 lung cancer, and I was an EMT at the time, and I helped take care of him in his final days, and I helped take care of my grandmother, his mother, in her final days. So I jokingly say that in my family I'm like Rafiki in The Lion King, where I'm like this weird character that just comes in at like life transition moments, and nobody really understands me, but everybody respects me, and then I go live in a cave for the rest of the movie. And I embrace that, right? Because it gives me armor. It gives me a role to play. It gives me a sense of belonging when I don't feel like I'm truly a part of the pride of lions that is my family. But then I go to the Philippines, and I'm this big bumbling foreigner, and they're like, oh, that's like 20 pesos. And I reach into my pocket, and all the money tumbles out, and everybody's staring at me, and I don't know which currency is the right currency. And I go to lean against the thing, and I almost knock over the food stall. That's who I am in the Philippines, right? And my father was, in the Philippines in this village. It's Remedios. It's a small village dedicated to Our Lady of Remedies, Remedios. It's a rural village, rice paddies and water buffalo everywhere, but it's also rapidly urbanizing. In the Philippines, there's not really a distinction between urban, what we would call urban spaces and agricultural spaces. Everything is sort of seamlessly blending into each other and rapidly growing and industrializing, and it's teeming with humans, with people. People are everywhere at all hours. I never felt unsafe because of that. Children are everywhere at all hours, running the streets of this village. Everyone is looking out for their siblings. Everyone has huge families. There's not a lot of security or in the sense of financial wealth. But there is so much security in the sense of community that everyone is always watching out for each other. It's not hard to get by with nothing in a world where everyone is just getting by with nothing. But that is also suffocating, right? Like, everyone's always in my business. Everyone always knows everybody's gossip. You know all of these icky stories about each other. And there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to move on to. So I was walking through the village, and I realized that as I'm meeting all of these cousins that I've never met before, children, and folks who were many times my age, and everyone's your cousin in the Philippines. And if they're older than you, then they're your auntie or your uncle, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has that relational understanding almost instantaneously. Oh, you're Jovan's son. Oh, I went to school with Jovan. Oh, I babysat Jovan. So you're family now. Come here. Come eat everything in my house, right? No, you haven't eaten enough. I put on a few pounds in the Philippines. Just before the trip, my father told me that he wasn't going to come, that he had gotten sick, his wife had gotten sick, RSV, and reading between the lines, I could tell that there was a lot of anxiety on their parts, too. And I was secretly relieved, I'm ashamed to say. I was relieved because I was afraid of confronting my father with this experience of trying to find my family from this man who is my father. And that is still a conversation that I have yet to have with him, right? Of all of our misunderstandings, all our conflicts, a lifetime of miscommunication with this man. But what that gave me in that time, in that space in the Philippines, was a time to reflect on how, no matter how beloved, no matter how vast your lineage, love is still rooted in yourself. It must be rooted in yourself in order to be love. With apologies to the great Maya Angelou, love is not a currency. It can't be a debt. It can't be a deposit that earns interest. It has to be a complicated ritual, a sacrifice, a mystery. That's the only way it makes sense, is if it doesn't make sense. And the truest love, what I learned, the truest love is a lifetime of questioning, of exploring, of fighting, and of surrendering to all of these unknowable truths and realities and memories, that these traumas that we inherit from one another. We inherit and we have to let them go. And that is a lesson I still haven't learned. I can't quite let it go. I can't quite let go of how hard it was to be the son of my parents or the grandson of my grandparents. But I'm trying to heal with that. I'm trying to sit with that in these moments of silence, in these moments of solitude, in these moments with our loved ones. And I don't think we give enough attention to that in our lives these days, right? Because of the Hallmark cards and the holidays and the paid time off and the obligations, right? But how can we make space for ourselves with these loving wounds, these things that we've inherited that we didn't choose to inherit, these things that we may be passing on, that we're not choosing to pass on. Yet those are still things of love. So how can we make them more loving? So Salima mentioned some of the work I do with prisons, with theater, with my activism, and in the past I've spoken about my work as a homeless shelter manager and all of these other things that I've done in these communities, and none of that means anything beyond the acts of love that they can be or that they are trying to be. And it's not about comparing how much you have and how much you're capable of doing compared with someone else or with some other great donor or philanthropist or activist or leader in your communities, in our communities. I think love is about how willing am I to be vulnerable and truthful and present for someone near me. How can we make the lineage that we choose to be of? Thank you.
So as our time together this morning comes to a close, And Donna extinguishes our chalice, the light of which will go with us. Let us not forget that among other wonders of our lives, we are alive with one another. May we go forward into our week, honoring the mystery surpassing our sight and holding in our hands the gift of good work. As our closing video concludes, we will stand and sing together, carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again. Please do join us downstairs for coffee, conversation with each other, with Donna and with Paul, and check out the social justice table also to see how you can help further democracy this week.